Let me say here for the recording office upstairs, this is a session on the wisdom of Proverbs from the book of that name in the Bible, from the book of Proverbs, and it's part of four sessions on the wisdom of Proverbs. A couple of you, I think, were in yesterday's session where we talked about family Proverbs and the meaningfulness of those Proverbs as we were growing up. And today, we're moving to another rather traditional source of Proverbs, namely the book of Proverbs. And a number of those Proverbs are kind of shortened and sanitized, and they become the sorts of things you find in Poor Richard's Almanac, and they become part of our culture and actually in translation part of German and Norwegian and most other cultures. The book of Proverbs and Shakespeare have been two of the richest sources of proverbial wisdom in most of Western Christendom. And so today what I've done, although we have, this room does have a number of Bibles in it, is in the interest of the environment, by the way, this is printed on both sides of the page. But I have some Proverbs here I want to share with you, and I do need to look at my script. So this is Reynold Feldman doing this Proverbs thing, and that's not my script. This is my script, so let's look at my script here and see what we're really doing. Okay. Well, since we're a small crew, why don't we just go around and say our names, and then we'll kind of go on from there. I'll pass around these things and then have you look at these Proverbs, and then we'll get into a couple small groups and talk about them. Actually, even before that, I might have you write just a bit to stir up the conversation, and then we'll have a general discussion. And I want to complete this morning by a discussion on biblical wisdom, the ordinary and the proper. Now, that's a Catholic term in the Mass. The ordinary are those parts of the Mass which need to be there for the Mass to be complete. The proper, like prefaces, are parts of the Mass which, and of course we have it in our Mass as well, in the Lutheran Eucharist service, which are appropriate to particular times and seasons, but not to others. And so an ongoing issue in the Bible is what are those things which are in all times and in all places for all people under all circumstances appropriate, needful, and central as guidance, as guiding words, and which things do we feel are no longer such, maybe appropriate to the time that the words were written, but not appropriate now. It's always a tricky issue, but we're pretty cool people, so we'll be able to deal with tricky issues, I think. Anyway, for now, let's just go around, and why don't we start with you, sir, just to give your first name and any other piece of information you'd like to share with this august body.
Yeah, well, and be teaching some things about food and man, humankind. I guess humankind is a better word for that. So if you want to hear something about food tonight and where it comes from, I'll be having a session this evening.
Okay, well, thanks. And we'll see, we can go around the brave people who sat in the first pews, and then we'll hit the balcony people.
Okay, I'm Marie, and I'm just a guest here. This is my first time at Holden, just beginning to learn the system because we came yesterday.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm from Seattle.
I'm Mert, and I'm from Seattle, and first time just learning the system too. We came together with our husbands.
They're lost.
What if there isn't a system? I can
say. Yeah. Well, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, yeah.
I'm Catherine, and I come from, I'm teaching in Malaysia right now, teaching choral music, and this is my third time at Holden, but 6 days has been my longest, and I'm excited about being here that length of time.
Thanks, Catherine.
Will Miners, this is my fifth time at Holden. I guess, well, I'm a waiter right here at Holden. I'm a perpetual student.
I understand there's no difference between the two, but maybe where's home for you, Will?
Oh, Minnesota, St. Cloud.
St. Cloud, okay. Good, and let me start with Karen for that later.
I'm Karen, and always interested in a neat turn of phrase. I love language, and interested in this.
Okay.
My name is Claude. I'm from the Seattle area. I guess the best way to describe myself is in a great state of transition.
Ah, lucky you. When you're in transition and the woman's pregnant, that means that you're just about dilated enough to have the baby come out. So you're lucky.
My name is Jerry, and I'm from Bellevue. Claude didn't want to say Bellevue for some reason, but that's where he's from also. I'm also transitioning, I guess, because I'm retired just less than a year ago, so transitioning. And I've been in Holden, we've hiked in 5 or 6 times over the mountains, and then we've been here other times also. So.
That's probably why you look so young, was all that hiking that did it. Yeah. Why don't we go back here, and then we'll swing over by the window.
I'm Gay Geist from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yes.
And my job is to help elderly people stay in their homes. And we've been here 4 times.
And Gay and her husband Ray just celebrated their 35th wedding anniversary the other day. Mm-hmm. Was it 2 days ago now?
Yeah. Tuesday.
Same day as yours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Flag Day.
14.
Thanks, gay ladies.
I'm Yvonne Horton. They call me Vanjie. I'm from Minnesota. I'm a retired teacher.
Where in Minnesota would that be?
Fergus Falls.
From Fergus Falls. Okay, that's real Minnesota. As we say, greater Minnesota.
Phyllis from St. Paul. This is my second time here.
Okay. And I'm Reynolds from St. Paul. Okay, let me pass these out to you. I guess we have time to pass on them. Let's give you one. Oh, thanks. It makes me feel better. Now, you can just write on the back of this paper, and I have a couple extra pens. What I'd like you to do is just read through these proverbs, and then pick out one that speaks to you, either positively or negatively. And then just write for a couple minutes about why this proverb says something to you, just at the bottom of the second side of the page. Before we start sharing our proverbs, I think we have just a half hour now, so what we'll do, since we're a relatively small and friendly crew here, is we'll just go around and people can read off the page what they've written. And if any of you are wonderful writers, the rest of us will be impressed, but we won't be daunted, I promise. But just for fun, it's always curious to see which proverbs speak to people's conditions and if there are any overlaps among this particular group. So let me see here. Did anyone pick out number 1? Just sort of raise your hand. Or number 2? Number 3? 4? Anything up to 9? No? 10? 11? 12? Sort of like bingo. 13? 14? 15? Okay. 16. Which one did I do? 17. 18. Yeah. That's what I did too.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Jackpot.
Now I think God is telling you something right here. Okay. Number 19. 20. 21. Okay. 22, 23, 24,
25.
24? You're 24, Catherine?
I'm
24. Okay. 25. 26? 27. Okay, now isn't that interesting? See, we have 11, 12 including me. That's 8, 10, 12. That's right. Isn't that, you know what the probabilities of that happening are?
That is a good answer. I was thinking, afterwards I looked through it again and I could have almost picked 12 too. I was looking at 12 and I said I could have almost picked that.
Well, let's begin. then I was originally going to just sort of use space determinism and we could just sort of start and go around as we did before. But I think it would be more interesting to start with the folks that did, you know, picked out one different from another, and then the two people, and to see what they wrote about the same thing, and then we'll have our little sort of seminar of the six of us. We'll meet afterwards and figure this out, right? So let's begin with, who is it that did the number 15?
I did, and I didn't really do any writing about it.
Well, just speak about it.
14 and 15 were both kind of go together for me, and I was thinking of when I'm working with my elderly people, a soft answer turns away wrath, and I do find a lot of pain at times. And if I react with anger, boy, we just end up with a really bad situation. And so the soft answer sometimes makes them kind of come around and say, oh, yeah. And the one before, a person of quick temper acts foolishly, but a person of discretion is patient. You know, so often if you're angry, if you just wait a while, somehow it doesn't seem so bad, and you know, you can't. Oh, well, I'm glad I really didn't react to that right away.
That word patient and passion come from the same root. It's really interesting. Patire to suffer. And so a patient, as in a medical patient, Gail next door is talking about medical things right now. And when we're a patient, that means we undergo something, we suffer, and that's the root of the passio, the passion of Christ, is Christ suffering on the cross, which is different from what we, you know, the secular world thinks of as passion, the more common usage. But then the word patience, I suppose, then means the ability to bear or to stand suffering. And we say, be patient. We really say, hang in there. We know it hurts now. And I know for myself, when I'm angry, a lot of times I'm angry because I'm impatient. I'm frustrated. And I imagine being an older person and seeing the systems not working and the children not visiting you as much as you'd want and facing death. That's suffering. But it's not patience.
All the losses you have.
Yes,
and all the losses.
They're much more sensitive.
So patience has to be one of the hardest and yet most necessary things to learn. And there's that split second when somebody comes on to you with anger and you didn't do anything. You're not even the target of it. You're just convenient, you know, you're there. And at that moment, to be able not to respond with anger, but just to suffer it and allow it to go through you is really a very important tool as well as a gift, I think. So, Gay, you're fortunate that you can do that, and the rest of us need to learn. And number 16 was? Okay. Yeah, Karen.
Well, I have a couple of responses to it. Better a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted ox and hatred with it. I just liked the imagery. I mean, and I gave more attention to the food and the love than I did to the hatred. A couple of my responses, the central point is love, it's of the heart rather than wisdom, which is of the head, and of the two I like a good balance.
Mm-hmm.
Then being in a vegetarian mode here at Holden, it sounded good to my palate. It makes my mouth water to think of a good herb soup and love.
Mm-hmm.
Then I thought it spoke a wisdom to an age of consumerism, that we with our full tables get too numb to know. And then it made me sad. It created sadness in me because I realized my father's love of Black Angus cattle, which he raised to perfection for our table and the tables of others. And now I no longer support that idealism, his profound sense of vocation in raising cattle well. And I don't really believe in that life of my family anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I identify very strongly with being a child on the prairie and loving the raising of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother still does raise cattle, and we're always in argument about this issue. I mean, he doesn't think we should be backing off of beef the way we are.
Actually, when you ride through South Dakota, even on the interstate, you see signs there, great big signs about, you know, support beef, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's really interesting.
Oh, it's a very different way of life, and the mentality is different. Mm-hmm. And we who don't raise beef and don't make our living that way, we get real idealistic about it and forget about what that other angle is, too.
That brings up the issue of how I think many of us have differences with our parents in terms of their values, or our siblings, I certainly do. And the issue is how to resolve through love, how to be in family, but not to be limited. When we, you know, when we join the larger family, we join the body of Christ, let's say, or we join the family of earth, of all earth. And in a sense, we're part of a different family. And those two families don't speak to each other. It's like when you marry out, or in my case, when I joined a different religion from my religion, or I married a German person, and as a Jew, that was not on with a lot of my fellow ethnicists. And how do you communicate across that gap? And how do you retain love when there's a great tendency to say, you put me down, you don't understand. I mean, my parents were so disappointed when I didn't choose a profession that brought in a lot of money, and they felt that their whole investment in boarding school and an Ivy League education, I mean, you know, I mean, they were probably thinking, gee, they could have put this in a house or in some business venture. And I was almost like, to a certain extent, like a business venture that exploded in their face, you know, some real estate in Florida that was under 20 feet of swamp, you know, and then they shoveled all this money and it just went right down to the alligators, you know. And how do you talk across that that thing? So, and I think in a sense, as far as proverbs go, these proverbs are like these lightning flashes of insight, you know, and for a moment you can see in the distance, but you can't read the newspaper by them. They bring you part of the way. I mean, they say here, like this one, better a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted ox and hatred with it. Yes, but what if the love isn't there? How do we create the love? How do we recreate the love? And, you know, how do we, what's the book that we use in many of our Sunday school classes, Free to Be You and Me? How do you live in a situation where people really don't want you to be free to be you, as you understand yourself? It's hard. So anyway, the limitations of Proverbs is the rubric there, I suppose.
Well, she quotes you from last night. Never tell the alligator's got a big mouth until you cross the pond.
Oh yeah, don't call the alligator big mouth till after you've crossed the river. That's an African proverb. Okay, number 24, please. Who is 24? Okay, Catherine.
It was with patience a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue will break a bone. And I again spoke basically to the first part, because I'm thinking that in this age of instant information, patience is not necessarily seen as a virtue, either from followers or leaders. It would seem that a ruler has more access than any age before to wise advisors and decision making. And yet issues seem even more confused, and leaders seem to have greater difficulty making a decision. And with the information presented, our world of technology has consequences for every aspect of humankind in every decision a leader makes. And often compromise is the word. I suppose that's the only part that talks about breaking the bone.
Anybody else like to comment on that? I don't want to just be the glosser of all the texts here. If anyone else has something to say. Response? Yeah. Interesting cross-culturally how many of these proverbs come up in different formats, like in Taoism, the paradox of water being the softest and most flexible of all things, and yet water eats rocks. like the game we played as kids. I mean, a wonderful philosophical game, which I believe comes from China. Someone told me it did, the rock, paper, scissors, and how each thing is bigger and stronger than one thing, but something else is stronger than it, so that rock is the strongest thing. But we all remember paper covers rock. Ha ha, whap, and we all got hit as kids or in camp. And it's really true. I mean, it's this kind of yin-yang, that there's something that is, there's an ultimate paradox, like if you want to get to the Far East, you travel west. But it's true, it's true. Well, thank you, Catherine. That was number
24.
Oh, 24. I'm sorry, 18 we're supposed to skip. Number 25.
Listen.
Yes.
Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Mine isn't very profound, but this is what I said. This one speaks to me as plans can go awry so easily, and then there's disappointment. Therefore, I'm cautious about planning too far ahead, or at least boasting about what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is plan and pray and speak little of it. After all, pride does go before a fall. And also, another saying I heard, I didn't think of yesterday, is life is what happens when plans are being made. I've had a lot of this spring with mother's illness and death and this sort of thing. And so you just really can't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right. That speaks a bit to Catherine's one, too. I mean, the patience. Maybe leaders can be persuaded with patience, but it's like life and the situations. I mean, I feel so sorry for any president, but especially I feel so sorry for our young, handsome, optimistic president in there. And I mean, just being pulled apart, you know, it's like being drawn and quartered by ox carts going in different directions, with Bosnia over here and medical care over there and haircuts someplace else, you know. I mean, the poor person. And I think it's like that. So, I mean, you might be able to persuade a leader with patience, but the leader's probably not going to hang out and have the time, the gift of time, to wait until they're persuaded. Or like Lyndon Johnson, who was finally persuaded that Vietnam was a bad idea after it was really kind of too late. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, so time, you know, timing is the grand masterpiece, says Shakespeare.
But we as people have no patience. I mean, and we're getting sort of acculturated to have no patience because everything goes so fast.
Yes.
And we learn that whether it's a subliminal learning or not, we almost don't know what to do with the gift of some reflective time.
Right.
Because we're so
we're wound up.
We're action oriented and we're on to the next thing, and if you aren't, you must be wasting time.
Yes.
And so patience is not the virtue.
Yeah. Okay. We're moving along. Okay, now we have two folks who picked out number 21. Who are the 21 people? 21 Club. Okay. Okay, Claude, would you like to? Is it Claude, yeah.
21 is the hearing ear and the seeing eye. The Lord has made them both. And what struck me so strongly about this is that both the hearing eye and the hearing ear and seeing eye are primary senses for experiencing consciousness and being in this world. And that they are the Lord, that the Lord created those for us to be conscious and sense our existence here. But without them, without the senses of hearing and seeing the spirit within us, as part of our human body, can experience the world. But if it weren't for that, our spirit could only be in the world but not of it. So it's the method that the Lord has given us to be in and of this world. And also, it's interesting that those senses aren't speaking senses or tasting senses, they're the taking in senses.
Right? Oh, that's really, yeah, that's... I was thinking we should have a word in hearing or something, too, but we don't.
Yeah, we could go off on that, too, the difference between hearing and listening.
Yeah, Ephatha, you know, for the pastors here, you know, hearing to obey, yeah. I hear and I obey. Who was the other one with number 21? Thanks.
I was. I'm afraid mine is not very profound.
Don't be afraid. It's the last person who said that, I thought it was dynamite right on. So we'll just take this as an example of very slight false modesty.
I have often wondered which of the major senses I would prefer losing. And I've never been able to come to any conclusion. But I feel that both of these are terribly important because God has created them.
Yes. Yeah, anybody else to respond to?
I resent that one because I have a son that has a sight handicap, and I hate to have them, you know, as if the Lord created them both and you have to have both. And if you only have one, or one is lessened, it rather implies inferiority. Or maybe, you know, but that may be a mother's sensitivity.
But he has certainly triumphed over it. He's done very well scholastically.
Well, I think the New Testament is helpful here too, you know, where Jesus says, ye who have ears and see not, or hear not, ye who have eyes and hear not. And I think for me, what I picked up here is the issue of the hearing ear and the seeing eye. I mean, many of us have eyes and we can physically see, but we don't have insight, nor are we observant. Things are right. I mean, the famous short story by Edgar Allan Poe called The Purloined Letter. And remember, they're looking around, tearing this place apart, looking for this letter in Paris, this really important letter. And it turns out at the end, the sort of the famous sort of prototype of all the later inspectors, Sherlock Holmeses and all these people, finally figures where the letter was by ratiocination, one of Poe's favorite words. It was right on the mantelpiece in clear view. Because no one in their right mind would think that such an important document would be left out, so people sort of never saw it. Right? And then if you read the Castaneda books, Don Juan is explaining to Carlos all the time about you have to learn to see, and you have to learn to hear. You have to see the signs. For example, Don Juan would say something in the journey to Ixalan, and then there would be a sonic boom over the New Mexican desert, and he says, you see, the sky agrees with me. But, I mean, so it's not enough to have the physical. And I think we have the example of Helen Keller, a woman who didn't see or hear, but who saw and heard a lot more than most of us do. And there's a funny line Clifton Fadiman has talking about Thoreau and Walden, Henry David Thoreau. He says, yes, he said, Thoreau could get more out of a minute with a mosquito than the average man could out of a whole night with Queen Cleopatra. So it's not really the experience, that is to say, it's not the having of the experience, but it's the, you know, as Paul says, there are gifts of tongues and there's the gift of interpretation of tongues. So it's not, again, what Claude said about the receiving. Blessed are you who see and understand. So, or even what he said to Thomas. He said, you know, blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's this whole thing about seeing and hearing. Seeing in the biblical sense means to understand, and hearing means to obey. There's a wonderful line in one of Rilke's poems, and we'll get on to the final group now. There's a wonderful line in Rilke's poem in the first Duino elegy where he talks about Höre, höre, höre mein Herz, wie sonst nur Heilige hört. And he says, listen, which of course to hear also means to obey in German. And Gehorsam is the word for obedience in German. It means the capacity of really hearing and listening. And we have it in English. We say, why don't you listen to your mother? That means, it doesn't mean, yes, yes, I have heard what you said. It means you get in the kitchen and you wash the dishes. It means you obey. So we really have it in English as well. And so Rilke says, listen, listen, O my heart, as in former times only saints would listen. They, kneeling, would be lifted into the air, and they never even noticed it. That's how much they were listening to the voice of God. Imagine this image of being levitated off the ground, and you're sort of totally blasé because you are listening to the BBC third program. You know, you're listening to God up there, and you're sort of, wow. And that's how much they were listening. And of course, Rilke, as a poet, says, listen in that way. If you can listen, if you can really hear what's there. A friend of mine was the head of the Ford project in Indonesia in the 50s. And he was talking about going to this tribe in in Kalimantan, in Indonesian Borneo, I think it was. And they had very little contact with outside people, even Indonesians, let alone with white people. And so it was rather difficult communicating with them. And he brought his transistor radio. And they just couldn't believe that there were voices in the air. I mean, they got real scared of this thing because these voices came out of nowhere. It was spooky. On the other hand, my friend Arthur Goodfriend told me how he couldn't believe that they said their great-grandparent was sitting in that particular tree watching this whole thing and laughing. So who, you know, who is seeing and who is hearing, right? And yet right now, even here in Holden Village, there are invisible pictures floating through this room. You say, oh, Feldman is spooky. He said, no, it's channel 2, channel 4, channel 5. Might not be a clear picture. And if we have the capacity to receive it, that is to say, if we have a receiver, a television set being, in a sense, eyes with which to see, we can conceptualize it. We can manifest it. So, you know, people say, I can't believe in God. God is invisible. Ha, you don't have a television set. God is here. Jesus Christ is here right now. Huh? I don't see any. I don't hear any Aramaic in the air. We don't have the eyes to see. So, Ephatha is more important than we think, and it doesn't have to do with the capacity to see or hear in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, the other kind of ordinary thing I guess I would add is that this is a sort of straightforward statement. The hearing ear, the seeing eye, the Lord made them both.
Right.
But if one or the other is impaired, the one that is not gets more sensitive. The Lord has made that.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it is involved in that process. You know,
compensation.
Yeah. When you get that heightened awareness of the thing you don't have,
right.
God is involved in that opportunity too. And that's kind of, it's always been really mysterious and wonderful to me that really happens.
Yeah. And it's a mystery why these things happen.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the group, those of us who converged on this number 18 here, the six of us. And who would like to read theirs first or speak to it first?
I will, because mine's most simplistic, I'm sure.
Now, come on, that's I'm about to say that it's a sin to put yourself down. It's the 11th commandment, thou shalt not put thyself down, please.
Okay, I just wrote that, I feel this is so true in my life. You know, people's minds plan their way, but the Lord directs their steps. And my mind will race in many, many, many directions. But if you just stop, and if you rest, and if you pray, then suddenly the right answer seems to come forth. And then you know what is the right thing to do.
Right.
And the opposite is also true, that if you just race and make a wrong choice, it often doesn't seem right, and you're uncomfortable with that choice, and then you need to, you know, reverse the whole process and do it again.
Yeah. To in the final session, we're going to be creating proverbs for our own future, and I created one once which goes, you can't outrun the devil, you can only outwait him. This really fits with that. Who else would like to share their number 18 statement?
I covered several things. Profession, marriage, children, jobs, and so on. But in my profession, as an example, I started out wanting to be a sailor. I married a woman who didn't like the sea. Then I chose to be a musician, which led me to be a therapist of all things, which led me to be an occupational therapist, which was my final profession. It led me to choosing specific jobs which round up to being where I wound up living and answering my final prayer, which was to be in an education setting. And it just, everything happened, you know. I had general plans, but the specifics happened. Mm-hmm. It was never seemed to be my total directing or control of the whole system.
Thanks, Will. Who'd like to add theirs? Okay. This is Phyllis.
Yes. I don't know, this just kind of jumped out at me.
But no, I didn't write any particular thing, but then I looked in the Bible too, and I happened to have good news. And there it says in verse 9, direct your actions rather than your steps. But then going back to verse 1, which it says, we may make our plans, but God has the last word. Mm-hmm. So that maybe says it even stronger. The same mm-hmm. thing. But
Black people say, God says the amen. That's my experience. Who else has done this number?
I did. I'm a very practical person, Jerry? So I do a lot of planning.
Uh-huh.
Always have with my old, in work it's easy because you have to do it there. You
can right.
do it there. But even in my own life, I've done a lot of things. I write things down. But then the other thing I say is I accept whatever does happen. I have that capability also to accept what does happen if it's different than what I had originally planned.
Right. That's the blessing.
That's yeah.
Yeah. Who else had this one? Okay.
It's interesting because when you said Walt. Pick one, I knew what the assignment was. And the first thing I did was to go through and highlight some, and then I wrote, and then I said it was 18.
Okay.
So I didn't say, well, can I put my name up more than once?
Sure.
So here's what I wrote. I liked and really identified with 10, with 10 of the 27. In fact, I liked them all. I hadn't realized that so much of my personal philosophy was related back to these types of verses from Proverbs. Within each or most of the 10 I started on first reading, I identify learning, parentheses, from people, books, years, experience, etc., parentheses, as important in my life. Given the faculties to observe, reason, and act, I am grateful, and I do feel that I have been blessed to be, and will have opportunities in days and years ahead to experience, share, etc. Within family and community, I trust that this is part of my journey. That's number 18. Mm-hmm. In other words, I like the 10 I started was understanding, learning, you know, really being blessed if you can have that. Because, and I was really surprised how much these
mm-hmm.
I like them all. This is like reading Benjamin Franklin's
Richard. Well, I'm surprised though, no one has commented on the last one. I stuck that one in on
did
purpose,
you?
Yeah. Normally, when I put a selection, I put things that I sort of agree with, you know, it's a biased a priori. But this one I wanted to put in because I would say for myself, it says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to itself brings shame to its mother. Basically, spare the rod and spoil the child is biblical. And that was the format that it came across in Ben Franklin. And I think for many of us nowadays, that's considered child abuse. Not discipline, but the belt or the ruler or stuff like this. I mean, there are even laws in many states. Teachers dare not touch a child or parents. You know, children can get help against it. And yet it is biblical. And so, I mean, it's an interesting kind of question that we could spend a whole hour debating. The basic question is, what do you do when you find something in the Bible that you don't like, you disagree with, or you think is just downright wrong? You know, and if you come from a certain background or persuasion, I mean, it's a real bind because this is the inspired Word of God. I think that those of us who are from Lutheran or even mainstream churches in general do have a little dispensation from that in that we do have our individual right of interpretation to try to understand or even to see that something maybe is no longer quite relevant to our day. This is how they did it back in Solomon's day. But of course Solomon says the wisest person who ever lived, at least in the Judaic tradition, and yet what did he have, 100 wives and 500 wives and 1,000 concubines or something like that? And I don't know how smart that would be.
That was pretty stupid.
I mean, exactly. I'm with you. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that one might be forgiven for doubting or disagreeing with. Yeah.
I think part of it, though, the reproof mm-hmm. rather than the rod, because if children
right.
aren't disciplined, then they do bring shame.
Right. I mean, this is what we
yeah,
actually do
reproof,
is we take.
I think, is
right.
what you,
we take the part yeah. of it that we can accept, and that we say the point is if you let children run wild,
that's
you know,
right.
that we probably most of us would disagree with that. I think we would simply say, but our form of disciplining might be more like dry coursey and you know, logical and natural consequences or set limits, but it wouldn't be okay, you little so and so wept sort of thing.
Well, we had one son that a swat across the back, so I didn't do a thing.
Right.
I just looked it straight in the eye and from my way. So, you know, but the words, so it depends there too.
We did too, and he became a hockey player.
Well, who else had this one? We need to end here, but who else had this one just to get a chance to read what you said quickly?
That's
it. Is that
it? Except you.
Yeah.
Well, what I wrote is, people's minds plan their way, but the Lord directs their steps. And it reminded me of the old saying, man, sick, proposes, God disposes. And I'm glad that the actual direction of my life is God's responsibility. Though I attempt to let go and let God, I still endeavor to do my part, that is, use my common sense, self-restraint, follow the laws of the land, even plan my future. But it's important to strike a balance. My worst moments are when things have to go my way, or the way I wanted or planned them. I become inflexible, frustrated, and angry, hard to be around for others and even myself. When I learn to flow, to let God say the Amen, however, things still work out, even if not as I had planned. God's will eventually be done anyway. The statement in the Lord's Prayer, Thy will be done, is thus for our benefit. When we can let go and let God on a regular basis, serenity is the harvest that we reap. This saying from Proverbs provides the context for that set of thoughts. So that's what I wrote. Well, thank you all very much. I hope this session was helpful to the general cause and was kind of fun too.
Fascinating. Thank you.